Now, with Anzac Day this week, it's worth looking back at just how passionately the word Anzac was embraced immediately after the Gallipoli campaign. It was devised effectively for Gallipoli, and there was a lot of debate, but also division afterwards about who could use the name Anzac. Soldiers and their families felt entitled. They felt a certain moral ownership. But the government of the day usually said no. Catherine Bond is a senior lecturer in the University of New South Wales Law Faculty, and Catherine has looked at control of the word Anzac for her new and very timely book. It's called Anzac, The Meaning, The Legend, The Law. Catherine, welcome to Saturday Extra.
Hi, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
You've done a terrific little book here, very readable, a socio-legal history of the word, but as I say, very approachable in layman's terms. Anzac is a word unlike any other, isn't it? Because its use was and still is very heavily regulated.
Yes, that's correct. You could probably say that it's the most regulated word, particularly of national significance in the world. The only comparator would be something like Olympic, which obviously has international symbolism and significance. But Anzac is a really one-of-a-kind word in terms of the regulation and the extent of that regulation that we go to in Australia.
I chuckle because many years ago when I was a newspaper reporter, I covered the Sydney Olympics. I can tell you now how proprietary, the Olympic people were about the use of that word. But of course, that word's caught up with all sorts of money as well.
Absolutely.
Mega millions.
Yeah. And I think it's actually even increased since the Sydney Olympics as well, as social media has particularly taken off. And you're correct. I believe that those marketing issues and sponsorship issues really do come into play there.
Now, why did you write this book?
For me, it was a passion project almost, because the work came about when I was at the National Archives and I started to read the letters of family members and soldiers who had written to the government asking for permission to use the term Anzac and were invariably denied. And as a legal academic, a legal historian, it bothered me that that had been the case, that this law had been introduced and it had caused such hardship to people during such a difficult time, probably the most difficult time in their lives. Mm. And so I wanted to investigate why this law was introduced, what was its application and how it could have continued to this day as well.
Do you have any family Anzac connection?
I don't have any family Anzac connection. I'm a second generation immigrant from the UK. Both of my grandfathers, though, served in the British Armed Forces, though.
In World War II?
World War II,
oh, right, yes. So let's go back then to 1916, because there's a very poignant letter that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald, and it's written by someone who says, "I am a mother of Anzac men." That's how she identified herself. And she felt very strongly that the word Anzac should not be widely used. You reproduce this. Let me ask you to just read that extract for us.
Certainly. So it's from the Sydney Morning Herald, published the Saturday, 5th of February, 1916. And it starts, "To the editor of the Herald. Sir, let me too, from the faraway bush, add my protest re the use of the name Anzac. As a mother of two Anzac men, I read with sorrow that it was proposed to name roads, avenues, tram lines, after that most sorrowful of all names to so many. Surely it is a word that can only be spoken with the most loving and reverent tone. And think, if by that tram line there must travel wives and mothers whose dear ones lie in that faraway cemetery, Anzac, how their hearts would be torn afresh by the loud call of the conductor's Anzac. The very thought is unbearable. It is a holy name enshrined deep in the hearts of hundreds of noble women who gave so freely of all that made life worth living. Many of our hearts lie buried out there at Anzac, and our days are filled with sorrow and longing for the heroic dead lads whose brave young manhood was so freely given. And though our pride in them is great and helps to bear the pain, yet the agony of loss only God knows. On behalf of all the mothers who I know feel with me on this, let me plead that those in authority forbid that this most sacred name shall be used in familiar and common use. Let the bereaved mothers keep it in quietness and reverence as we do a shrine for all time. God's Acre, the place of our beloved dead. I am, etc., a mother of Anzac men.
Yes, she frames herself there, the mother of Anzac men, plural. Mm. Was she speaking in that letter on behalf, if not measured scientifically, then emotionally? Was she speaking on behalf of a lot of women, a lot of mothers?
I believe that was the case, but there was also division between the community, between mothers and soldiers and fathers who believed that, on the one hand, some of these believed, some mothers, family members believed they should be able to use the term Anzac because it was sacred to them. On the other hand, we have women like the writer of this letter who believed the term shouldn't be able to be used because it was sacred to them. And so in introducing regulations, as the government eventually did, the government had to navigate the emotions of the particular, of the emotions that this word created, and ultimately decided that the best way to approach it was to deny all applications to use the term, regardless of circumstance.
I notice she referred there to proposals to name roads and avenues and tram lines.
Yes.
Was she referring there to Anzac Parade in Sydney?
No, she wasn't at that time, actually.
Because it did have a tram line running down the middle of it.
Yes, it did. So the tram line she refers to was actually one proposed at the start of 1916 in Woolloomooloo. Mm. Anzac Parade was originally Randwick Road. Mm. It was renamed Anzac Parade in 1917. One of the reasons being famously that soldiers would march down from their Kensington encampment, where UNSW is today actually, would march down to Circular Quay when they were sailing out from Sydney.
Mm. I suppose it depends on the reverence of the tram conductor.
Indeed.
If he blew his whistle and said Anzac, if it was in a rather throwaway tone, you could imagine the,
indeed, I agree,
the sensitivity. That writer also evoked the word holy, and later in the letter she said the name Anzac is sacred.
Yes.
Very religious terms.
Yes. Yeah, at that, and this became a word to the community that after Gallipoli, and after particularly the losses of Gallipoli began to be reported, it became a common word in the community. It went from being that term that referred to Anzac being the military section, to being that common lowercase Anzac that we use most commonly today. And so it was used a lot in the community, but it had that sacred connotation. And that was one of the reasons the government decided to step in to make sure that that sanctity was not abused.
Saturday Extra, Andrew West in for Geraldine. I'm speaking with Catherine Bond. Catherine's the author of a new book, Anzac, The Legend, The Landing, The Legend, The Law. Very appropriate, because Catherine's a senior law lecturer at the University of New South Wales. Tell us about the great division over when it was appropriate to name things Anzac and the fear that it would cheapen the word.
So the idea behind the regulations was that the government was seeking to stop the word being both overused, to protect those kind of sacred or holy connotations, but then also to make sure that the word was not misused as well. But then you have these situations where individuals might be seeking to use the word, they have a connection with it, but they're not ultimately able to. So the government introduced two regulations, the first prohibiting the use of Anzac in business, and the second prohibiting the use of Anzac on the name of a private residence, boat, vehicle, or by a charity. And again, there was a division between both returned soldiers and their families, and other returned soldiers as their families, as to whether they should have special treatment under these laws.
Catherine, you could see why people would be very defensive.
Yes.
And unsympathetic to the way this word could be hijacked by commercial entities.
Absolutely.
But for example, tell me about Alice Pennington.
Yeah, so her story is particularly sad. Prior to the outbreak of war, her son Robert built a building, and it was planned that he would return home to work there once he returned from the war. He ultimately died in Gallipoli, and in December 1915, Alice realised that she now needed to make a living, and so she called, she created a refreshment room at that building and called it the Anzac Tea Room. She wrote to the government asking to be able to keep the term Anzac on the building once the restrictions were introduced. And she stated that, "I feel as a mother who was given her only son at Anzac that none could be more entitled to use the name which he has helped to make." And you can understand that feeling of entitlement, absolutely.
And all she wanted to really do was run a humble tea room.
Indeed. And perhaps, and both show that connection with Anzac, but also remember her son while doing so as well.
How many other people, though, how many other business people tried to play on the word? Wasn't there a toy company and some sort of fishing and gaming company?
Yeah, there were a number of there were a number of applications to use the word Anzac, and some did have a familial connection and others did not. Some did indeed try to use that familial connection to get out of a fine, for example, when they were prosecuted for use of the term Anzac. But for the most part, regardless of whether there was that connection or not, the government invariably denied all applications to use the term in business, and later when people made applications to name their homes Anzac as well.
What would be the objection to naming a home, you know, Anzac House or Anzac Cottage? It's not like you're making a quid out of it, and it's not like it may be considered a sign of respect.
Absolutely. But the government felt that once again, there was a risk that the word would be overused if we let anybody use the name Anzac as the name of their home. Now, there was a newspaper report that's quoted Solicitor General Robert Garran, who was responsible for introducing the regulations. And he said, look, if we give, we've received scores of applications, and if we give everybody who is entitled to use the word Anzac permission to use it on their home, then we're going to have one in 10 homes named Anzac. In actual fact, there weren't quite so many applications. I've counted 73 in the National Archives. And as I mentioned before, these really are quite devastating letters of personal loss, one of the reasons that I wrote the book. But regardless, the government maintained that regulation. And again, that regulation is still in force to this day. You can't name your home Anzac today.
Well, tell us about something rather larger than a home. What were the proposals for the use of the term Anzac when referring to a sea and also to a city?
Yes, so there were suggestions. They weren't popular suggestions, but there were suggestions within the community that, for example, a gentleman in Tasmania contacted the government in 1916 suggesting that the Tasman Sea be renamed Anzac Sea. He pursued this with the government, continuing to try to get them to do this until 1918, but was ultimately rejected. A member of the Labor government who was in power in 1916 as well, he proposed to Parliament that the capital be changed from Canberra, the proposed capital be changed from Canberra to Anzac, but his fellow parliamentarians did not approve of such a suggestion, pointing out that there are those two key letters, New Zealand, in the acronym as well, and perhaps that wouldn't be appropriate in the circumstances. Yeah,
and I think Canberra itself was only years old.
Yes, yes. It was still in development at the time.
Yeah. Look, just very briefly, what is the position today? Because we have Anzac Biscuits, and it seems to be a commercial enterprise. So what does the law allow today?
So the law still restricts the use of the name Anzac in business, also as the name of a home, a boat, vehicle, or by a charity. The Department of Veterans Affairs today oversees applications to use Anzac, and Anzac biscuits are one of the common things that people will get permission for and will be approved to use the name Anzac for. There are also exemptions for the use of Anzac Day or the use of the name Anzac in relation to Anzac Day entertainment. So when you're around and you see Anzac Day advertising or you're receiving emails, that's a specific exemption under the law that's allowed for Anzac Day advertising.
But if you're running a church fete or a fete at a sports event and you make your own biscuits and call them Anzac biscuits, no one's going to arrest you, I trust.
Probably not. But technically, if you are selling those biscuits within the protection of Word Anzac regulations, you do need to get permission.
Lovely to talk to you. Dr. Catherine Bond of the University of New South Wales. She's the author of the new book, Anzac, The Legend, The Landing, The Legend, The Law. And you can find it now. Catherine, thanks so much for being with us on Saturday Extra.
Thanks so much for having me, Andrew.